Welcome to the Vancouver Tech Podcast. My name is James.
And I'm Drew, and it's time to get started. Meetups around town.
Meetups around town.
Around town.
All right, Drew, we have a confession.
We do have it's not so much of a confession, more of a confessional.
Oh, okay.
Just kidding. So this was a really interesting week. It was, early, mid-December, and we didn't go to a lot of meetups this week.
Yeah,
although, I mean, you call it a confessional. James, you made it out to one of these meetups that we've been looking at, we've been wanting to get to for a long, long time, and you finally made the effort to get up at 7 in the morning, 8 in the morning. I'm not sure. It was, like, really early before the sun comes up. There were probably bats in the sky and stuff, and you got out of bed.
Yes, I got out of bed for Open Coffee. So we talked about this a few times, and I finally said, you know what? I'm going to make it to this thing, whether I like it or not. So, left and got there right at 8 a.m.
And how'd you feel? What was the turnout like? What were the people like? What was the theme like? What was it all about?
It wasn't necessarily, like, a theme, but there was, at the end, there was, like, when I left around 9-ish, there was 6 people there. But these were 6 really interesting people. I talked to one of the guys, Corbin, I think his name is, and we were talking about... like just meetups, and we talked about the show, and I told him about it. And said, hey, you should probably listen to the show; it's pretty cool. So yeah, I told that guy. Talked to that guy about
what can you tell me about the coffee?
I had an Americano at Nelson the Seagull. It was pretty good. It was kind of small, and it was like $3.50, so it was kind of like
okay, so you know, but, kind of expensive Americano, but $3.50, whatever. I mean, that's pretty normal.
Yeah, I mean Americano usually like it's not just your standard black coffee. There's like. Especially made.
Right.
Less caffeine. So it's more
is how I see it. I'm all about the caffeine.
Well, I think Americano is a shot with milk.
I think it's a something shot like with that. Water.
Water? Is it? Then I'm thinking of flat white.
Flat white or latte or something.
But yeah. Cool. That was the only one, really. That was on Tuesday. And so that was fun, actually. I think I'll try to go again if I have some time in the morning to do that.
Nice. So if I'm thinking of going to that, what was it called?
Open Coffee.
Open Coffee. If I'm thinking of going to Open Coffee, what should I bring with me? What should I expect? What kind of people can I expect to interact with?
I'm not sure. I mean, I've only been once, so I can only say my one experience there. But I talked a lot about development, talked about like different events that were around town. I actually was asking about how Open Coffee was, and it sort of like advertises itself as startup drinks in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's less people there than would be at Startup Drinks, but that could definitely change. I've only got one sample right at the end of the year, so I'm not going to judge the whole thing based on this.
It kind of depends. I've only gone to Startup Drinks once as well, and I believe there were fewer people there than you probably had at Open Coffee.
Cool.
When I arrived, anyway, there were two.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was really it. So why don't we talk about events that are coming up?
Absolutely. So that was actually something I was thinking of. You know, was the Open Coffee something you'd go to and hack on something like this upcoming Monday? We have a hack night.
Yeah, we have the Polyglot Hack Night,
and that's an Unbounce 401 West Georgia on the 4th floor. We've got a pretty interesting space there. It's actually kind of I don't know a quarter of the building, just literally dedicated for them to have meetups and host people coming into their space. So Unbounce has been around for a while. Have you been to any of their events?
I haven't actually. Mm-hmm. So I might check this one out because it is a this is the one where you are actually bringing your computer and you're getting help if you need help or you know you're talking about whatever it is you're working on.
I don't know. It'll be interesting to see who's there. What this mentor night? It's like hack / mentor night.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see what that's about. I've got a few things I want to hack on. I'm not really sure if I'll be reaching out to people for some help or if I'll be able to help people out with their problems. But it'll definitely be interesting to go and check out. Unbounce, though, I wanted to kind of look at them and their transition from building to building over the past couple of years.
Yeah.
I think it was 2 years ago, probably, was the first time that I went to – it was a Ruby Lightning talk, actually. And it was in the old Unbounce office, which I think was probably their second office. This was over on Water Street. Do you know where Steamworks is?
Yep.
Okay, so it was right above Steamworks. It was really cool, you know, brick sort of startup feel. And I don't know, they had maybe 20, 23, 25 people, something like that. And they're like, oh, we're really growing. We have this pony keg or something that we actually went through today. And they used to have these open houses last Friday of every month. I think they still do that, though.
They got to compete with Wishpond on that part.
So Wishpond wasn't even a thing at the time.
Okay.
This is an interesting thing. And then they moved over to It was Granville and some street, and I believe it was it was probably Dunsmuir. You know where Elastic Path is on Granville? If you look up, it's on the second floor there. There's a building. Anyway, they moved into that same building.
Yeah.
I think they were on the second floor, actually. And they were there for like a year, and I think they'd gone up to like 75 people, and then boom, they outgrew their space again already. And now they're in 401 West Georgia. Believe it's all of the fifth floor and part of the fourth floor. And they have this part of the fourth floor they have set aside as just their meetup space.
Nice.
It's pretty cool.
So they went from, you said like 20, 25 people above Steamworks. And that's how long
ago? I think they went from like like 3 to 5 people that were like, hey, we got this cool idea. Let's try it out.
Yeah.
To like, you know, 20, 25 people the following year. Wow. To like 75 people the following year. To like 150 people the following year. Like it's
That's pretty amazing. You should definitely talk to someone from Unbounce because it'd be cool to talk about like how they scaled and all that stuff. Definitely, they even stayed around the same area, so it's definitely applicable to what we talk about.
Yeah, that's actually a really good idea. I've met a few people from Unbounce personally. Sarah, I think everybody, if you've ever been to Unbounce, you probably know who she is.
Yeah.
And Carter, he's one of the co-founders. And he's on, like, I think the design lead as well as being one of the co-founders. Maybe we'll see if we can get him on the show. I think he'd be really interesting. On the other hand, one of the other people who started, I believe, and or runs, maintains the Polyglot Meetup, Tavis, is also working there. And they seem to have, like, quite a good team.
Oh, you're talking about Tavis Rudd.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's one of the organizers here. So is Chris Nicola, but I'm not sure. He said that sometimes he doesn't make it out, but maybe you'll see him there too.
I think he said he was more involved in the monthly socials
that
they have.
Yeah. Yeah, let's jump to the next one, the Intro to Product Management Workshop.
Okay, so this is kind of interesting as well. We got BrainStation, which is this a newer bootcamp, an addition to the downtown core. They're, rather than being focused in the Gastown sort of startup new area, they're in Yale Town, and they're in a really interesting building as well. Nice brick. It's up on the second,
cool
third,
glass.
Fourth floor or something like that. Yeah, they have a great office space, pretty cool vibe as well, and pretty central to everything.
Yeah, they actually have their product guy, or Mobify has their product guy speaking at this. Mm-hmm. So this is Loki. He's actually talking. He's going to be talking about what product managers do, how it works with engineering.
What product managers do?
I don't know. I think I actually might go to this one because I'm kind of like a bit confused. I mean, I think I've met people that said they're product managers, but I've never asked like, so what do you do?
So when is this happening? This is happening on Tuesday?
No, these are both Monday. So both Polyglot Monday. And the Intro to Product Management are both Monday. Same time, 6 p.m.
Actually the same time at 6 p.m.
So yeah, it's going to be a tough fight. You got to fight between the two. I would say that there's probably not going to be that much crossover, so you're probably okay. Like, I don't think there'll be that much. Like, if you're going to Polyglot, you're probably not going to product management. If you're going to product management, you're probably not interested in the Polyglot.
That's an assumption I wouldn't necessarily want to make. What I would say, James, and this is something I might do, is I might imagine that the product management is going to be a talk directed at people who are listening.
Yes. That's exactly what it is.
So I might go and check that out. I'm guessing if it says 6, it probably won't start till 6:30.
Probably.
So if I wanted to go out and check that out, I'd probably be there, arrive at 6:30, listen to the talk, which would probably be a half hour to an hour, then some socialization, which I would leave, go to the hack Polyglot night, and hack away for the last half hour of it. Or
yeah,
that would
be much more efficient than what I'd be. I'd just be like, oh, I'll just go to one, and I'll just be stuck here. Also the Polyglot ends later. So you could always like stay longer.
What time
is
it go until?
So Polyglot 6 to 9, Intro to Product Management says 6 to 8.
There you go. So
and they're not
goes
that far
nine.
Apart from each other. Like
they're really not. 15-minute walk.
Yeah.
Okay. Tuesday we have something interesting happening.
Speaker series, Glory Juice.
Okay,
so Glory
that
Juice
sounds really weird.
Yeah, Glory Juice.
What's that about?
Yeah, it's not some sort of like athlete sweat. It's a nice fancy juice. I'm interested in this one too because this girl, Chantel Ray, I think I'm saying her name right. Mm-hmm. She'll be talking about how Glory Juice has sort of gone through their iterations throughout the city. That's actually at BrainStation as well. BrainStation has a bunch of stuff. I think we mentioned that last week.
My guess is that this Chantel Ray will be talking about Glory Juice as a startup, what their idea was, how they brought this idea to product, how they brought product to market, and what they're doing about it.
Well, you can actually taste Glory Juice there because it says there's free juice samples.
Free juice samples.
So if you're interested in having juice on Tuesday at 12... you can get that. So that's December 15th.
Are they hacking on that juice?
I bet they're hacking on that juice. Let's jump to Open Late and Open DNS Hack Night.
Open Late and Open DNS, or Open Late at Open DNS.
Yeah.
Have you been out to the Open DNS building, James?
Nope. This is my chance.
Pretty cool space. I really like their workspace. It's got a lot of kind of creativity in the vibe, I would say. Fifth floor of it's on Granville in Hastings. It's got the Royal Bank in it. It may actually be the Royal Bank building. And it's just great. I really like it.
So that's Wednesday, 6 to 9. And there's actually pizza there, too. There's pizza and drinks and stuff. So it's really there's no presentation or anything.
Open late hack night. What's the deal with the open late hack night?
It just says they use the time to sort of review any projects that you've gone. You've actually been to one of the OpenDNS meetups. I think it was the Docker one.
Yeah, I've been to a few meetups there. I'm really excited that they seem to be picking it up again. I think there was a couple of months where I believe Cisco actually bought OpenDNS.
Yeah, it was not even that long ago, a couple months ago.
6 months, five months, something like that. And it seemed like there was a couple of months that they didn't have these open houses anymore. And they were going really strong with it. So they've got either the open hack night, where I think they just open their doors and have people come by. They supply some pizza, maybe beer. I'm not sure. Don't take my word for that. I'll let you know next week. But they do that. And or they get really interesting speakers from around town to come out and talk about various topics. So they had the Docker meetup is what I went to. And if you've ever seen a Wicked Awesome Docker t-shirt and you're like, oh, that's really cool. I wish I had one of those. Go to a Docker meetup. There were tons of t-shirts. Didn't get you one, James. Haha. But I got one for myself.
Yeah, I was jealous. I actually noticed it. And I was like, oh, look at that shirt. It's pretty cool.
It's awesome. The meetup itself was really cool as well. I've been pretty impressed with all of the speakers, or at least the topics that they've lined up at OpenDNS. Brent Vatney, who I really hope we can get on our show, core contributor to React.js, working on the Exponent.js team, I believe, at the moment. He gave a really interesting talk before Cisco bought them out, so 6-8 months ago, something like that, in the spring, on React, of all things.
Ooh, yeah. Cool kids. All the cool kids were there.
Absolutely.
Now, Thursday is a day that actually has two conflicting meetups again.
Thursday.
Running over each other. So we have the Code Core Demo Day.
Mm-hmm. So that's it. That's, in my opinion, a really interesting event to go out to, but it depends on what your focus is. What do you think of when you think of Code Core Demo Day, James?
I know you're a little hesitant
whether we should put this on our events or not.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if people would be interested, but mm-hmm. it's essentially students showing off the projects that they did that year. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we talked to
Jason Tam, we talked to Alex,
Alex and Jade, and they were talking about their projects. So if you're maybe looking to hire someone or something like that, this would probably be a great place to go, right?
Next week, we actually have Tam, who's the founder and head instructor at Code Core, on our show. And that's part of our series on the changing face of education in tech. And it's pretty interesting. So I've talked to a few people about what is it like to come from a boot camp? What is it like to work in industry from a boot camp? What is it like to hire someone from a boot camp? And it seems like 6 months, a year ago, the question was, do students from boot camps get jobs, and where are they working? And it seems like that has actually flipped all the way around to name one company that doesn't have a boot camp student.
Yeah,
where are people getting their employees other than that? We had Chris Nicola on the show last week who said he hired somebody, actually a couple of people fresh out of school, but one of the people he hired as a developer was out of Lighthouse Labs, and he said he was really happy with this person.
Yeah. I mean, when I went to the Startup Week hack day, mm-hmm. the 24-hour hack day, was actually at the Lighthouse Labs office. And everyone that I met there that was a Lighthouse Labs student said, mm-hmm. like, yeah, I have a job lined up right away. One girl was actually working somewhere at the same time she was finishing school.
It's pretty interesting. They have a really cool space that's kind of Startup Central, Launch Academy inside there. And it's just really cool. Code Core as well, they got some pretty cool space. It's like right beside them.
Yeah.
If you punched a hole through the wall, if you were strong enough to punch through brick, you'd actually be from one to the other. So who should go to this sort of demo day? It's interesting. Anybody who's interested in, should I hire somebody coming out of this boot camp? What can they actually do? If you want to go and talk to somebody or see the fruits of their labor, go out to that. If you're interested in taking a boot camp, go out to it. If you're interested in just hanging out, meeting people in the community, having some pizza, go out to it.
Cool.
And what's the other one that conflicts with?
Code and Coffee.
Code and Coffee.
Yeah, I heart this one. Mm-hmm. That's a Thursday. So the Code Core is 6 to 9 on Thursday, mm-hmm. and then Code and Coffee is actually 6:30 to 8:30 on Thursday as well. So this one's actually at Mobify HQ. It's been there for a long time.
Where is Mobify HQ?
948 Homer Street.
So a bit of a walk. Code Core is over on Hastings, just off Canby. What is it? 124? 142?
Yeah, 142.
142 West Hastings. East Hastings. West Hastings.
Yeah. This one, like Cone Coffee normally has some sort of speaker or something. This one they said specifically, no, this is just for hanging out, chilling, drinking that coffee.
It seems like that's the general theme this week is
wind down.
Bring your laptop, you know, be ready for some conversations, hack on something. But there's not a lot in the way of speakers and presentations, except for Brain Station has a few things happening.
Yeah.
CodeCore has this demo night.
Right.
And what's happening after that, Friday?
Friday, I don't have anything right now, so Friday's your relaxing day.
Take it easy.
Yeah, take it easy. Yeah. Or maybe start your own event and let us know about it.
Absolutely. And so we do have, actually, this weekend, by the time this gets out, it'll be last weekend,
yeah.
devfest.ca. This is kind of interesting. There's stuff that happens mostly Google-centric, mm-hmm. so welcome to the Googleverse, welcome to Google Compute Engine, Google App Engine, Kubernetes. Kind of DevOps-y focus.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that's happening all weekend, today and tomorrow. So Saturday and Sunday, all weekend, 10 a.m. to 5 p.m., $90 for a ticket. I've got one, and I'm late.
Yeah, we're actually recording an hour into it. But so the DevFest is sort of the – do you know anything about Google's compute stuff or any of their app engine stuff?
Quite a bit, actually. About a year ago,
yeah.
I think it was November of last year when we had the last DevFest – we scrambled together to get a working platform as a service, at the time known as Staccato, a working image for Google's compute engine. And this is hilarious because I almost backed out at like, I don't know, a couple days beforehand, just saying, you know, we don't have an image that works on compute engine. We literally didn't have an image that worked.
Right.
They're like, I don't know what we're doing. We're kind of freaking out here. And so one of the guys the guy who organizes DevFest, Yaniv, I sent him an email. I was like, I really don't know if I can do this. And he comes back to me. He's like, well, what can I do to make sure that you're ready? And I was like, well, we need an Ubuntu image
right.
on Google's compute engine. And he's like, guess what? Here, talk to this guy, Brian Dorsett, like lead cloud engineer for Google's compute engine. And guess what? They had an Ubuntu image. It wasn't open to the public yet.
Oh.
I'm like, hey, here it is. Boom. We built our platform. We got everything ready literally the day of the presentation.
Wow.
And we did a workshop called Build Your Own Heroku on Google Cloud Compute Engine.
Oh, wow. So you actually got this sort of secret image that no one else had.
Oh, we opened it up to other people.
Yeah.
It was just an Ubuntu image. The following week, it actually came out.
Oh, so. Wow. Okay. So yeah, you guys, yeah. That presentation must have been sweet then. Because like, yeah, you can expect to have this later.
Absolutely.
Get ready for this. That's good.
Yeah, it was really fun. So Google, for people who aren't that familiar with Google's compute engine and some of their other offerings, they have some really interesting stuff out there. They're a little bit behind Amazon.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, they just are. But they're working with devs. They're getting places. They're going places that are really interesting. And I think some of their offerings, and my information right now is literally a year old. I haven't looked mm-hmm. at them at all in the
yeah.
past year. They may have caught up.
I know they're always like, tweaking things with App Engine and adding new support for different languages and stuff like that. So
I thought their offerings were amazingly interesting. Really liked working with people there. Reached out to people. They're really easy to get a hold of.
Yeah, you can definitely say the support is amazing. You got like amazing support.
Yeah, absolutely. And they really had some cool things. The downside is it doesn't seem like companies take them seriously.
I was looking at them for another project, and everyone I talked to was like, just try Amazon. Like, Amazon yeah. can do this, this, and this, and it's all chained together, and it didn't seem like that was the same ecosystem was around there.
It just, I think that's almost the biggest downside, is it doesn't seem like.
Right.
But I'd definitely give them a shot. I'm hoping to dig in a little bit later on, early in the year, in 2016, into continuous deployments,
mm-hmm.
Continuous integration on different infrastructures, and kind of really separate, you know, one of the things we talk sometimes about DevOps, what is DevOps, how
right.
does that work? And I think really separating your tools from your workflow so that something is really as plug and play as possible. You
yeah.
can pull this out, push that in. And if you're able to separate your infrastructure from your workflow, you know, from the concepts that you're
yeah.
actually doing. So whether you're deploying to Amazon or you're deploying to Google's compute engine, or whether you're deploying to Azure or locally, or, you know, with Canada's OpenStack, I believe it is. Is it OpenStack?
Open Data?
Nope, OpenStack.
Open
I'm pretty
stack.
Sure. So Oro is actually what I was talking
oh,
about.
Oh, what is that?
So Oro is built, they're really cool. This comes from a company, I think, called Canada Web Hosting or Canadian Web Hosting, something like that. And they decided to make a Canada-only infrastructure. So if you're a bank or if you're working on something that the data needs to remain local, they've got you covered.
Yeah.
R-O, A-U-R-O.
Yeah, it seems like even just hosting companies in general or these sort of cloud companies start taking Canada a little bit more seriously. Like I think that when I was at the AWS meetup, one of the guys was saying that hopefully Canada is coming soon for AWS. I don't think there's one right now. DigitalOcean just launched a Toronto droplet, and they had a meetup here in on the east side, Vancouver.
Or, I heard something a while back. I think some of the bigger, like IBM, might have some solution with that as well. But Oro, they're Canada focused.
Yeah.
And I think they're doing some really interesting things. Worth checking out. If you're interested at all in OpenStack, I think they're the ones behind the OpenStack meetup, which, by the way, we've had at OpenDNS.
Cool.
So that was, I think that was one of the first times I went out there.
Nice. So we can learn a lot.
Absolutely. And I think that's it for this week in meetups around town. All right. So we're here with our special guest today, Daffel. Just kidding. So you actually have a real name, and it's David. How do you say your last name?
Luque. It has a U umlaut in it usually, but we can't do it.
Okay. So that's pretty cool. I talked to you a little bit through the Vancouver's dev Slack channel, which is yvrdev.slack.com. And that for me anyway, that's been a really great place to kind of reach out to people to talk about different tech issues, or, you know, if I'm struggling with something, or if I find something really cool that I want to share with someone. It's cool. It's cool to have like a chat channel for the Vancouver dev community. How did you find out about that Slack channel?
It was actually the Coffee and Code meetup that I presented at, it was 2 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
So they mentioned it. I signed up pretty much the day after.
Awesome.
And it's pretty busy. It's nice that there's actually a lot of people in there.
It is pretty busy. There's some interesting things happening. Tell us a little bit about what would be a normal conversation that happens in the Vancouver's dev Slack.
I probably pay mostly attention to the JavaScript ones.
Oh, okay. So I pay more attention to random than anything else.
Yeah, there's a lot of discussion. There was a lot of discussion there. I was kind of busy, so I just followed it and haven't like jumped in. Mm-hmm. But I think it's good to know that there's people that you can reach out to.
Yeah, absolutely. So honestly, I definitely do pay attention to the random channel. I don't know, I'm kind of guilty of that. But General and Ruby are kind of the big ones for me. I've joined the JavaScript channel, to be honest.
That was the first one I joined.
Nice. Shows where our interests are. So tell us a little bit about yourself, David. I know you have recently come to Vancouver.
Yes. Before that, I lived in Calgary for 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, in Munich. And before that, I grew up on a goat farm in Bavaria.
Oh, that sounds pretty awesome, actually. A goat farm in Bavaria.
Organic goat farm. That's important.
Nice. So definitely organic goats.
Yeah.
As opposed to robot goats.
It was different. Like when my parents started this, it was kind of a very, very new thing, right? Mm-hmm. So, it was fun because it's different, because they both came from the city,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, "Hey, we should start a farm," and they just started a farm.
That's awesome.
So they were city sort of city dwellers before, and then they went to a farm.
Yeah,
was it the other way around.
They met at it's a commune kind of thing where mentally challenged people and families live together.
Okay,
and they helped out through my mom did an internship there, and my dad did his alternative service because you still got drafted.
Oh, okay.
I did the same thing.
Yeah.
And that's where they met. And then, they ended up going to a farm and moving there.
That's a pretty awesome backstory. That's really cool. So you grew up on a goat farm, brothers and sisters?
Yes, three.
Three.
And I'm going to get to see them in 3 days.
Do you miss the goats?
It was great as a kid. Mm-hmm. I don't think it would be the life I'd choose. That's why I ended up working with technology. But it was great growing up as a kid and everything. I would recommend it to everybody. But for me personally, always went more towards technology.
Sounds like a great thing. I grew up on the North Shore, and we had a Maplewood farm, which was a petting zoo, not really a goat farm. But they did have some goats. They had probably 8 or 10. And one thing I remember about those goats is they sure loved to chew on my shoelaces. And to this day, I don't have shoelaces. And I notice you don't either, David.
I didn't know it was because of that. We had an artist come and make a sculpture, and he had did the drawings, and you always saw the goats creep closer and closer, and then you just heard it rip and saw the goat chew on his drawings. So there's a lot of stories. They seem kind of silly sometimes, but they're smart when they want to be.
So that's pretty cool. Tell us a little bit about your educational and professional interests. What got you off the goat farm?
What got me off the goat farm? So what actually did is the same as why my parents met. In Germany until 8 years ago, you had to do mandatory military service.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got drafted, I knew I don't want to do that. And you can choose not to and do an alternative social kind of thing. And I found a computer science student who was physically challenged, and he couldn't move very much. So I signed up with him to help him out, record the lectures and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And then that was, I knew I wanted to do something with computers, but my high school degree wasn't that great. So I was like, okay, I'm going to do it the apprenticeship, because that's still a common thing in Europe. And he was like, oh, just apply for university. Come on. You know, we had a good time. You know a lot, and you grew a lot in the year that I was there, which is why I recommend to everybody after school to do something completely different. It's kind of sad that mandatory year of you got to figure out what you want to do is gone now. They stopped that, I think, 5 or 6 years ago. But he said, yeah, come on, just try to apply. And like in the last stage of the application process, I actually got into the Munich University of Applied Sciences. It's a long name, but or Hochschule München, as they say.
As they say.
And it was one of the first bachelor's degrees, so they just dropped it was called a diploma, but it's the 4.5-year diploma. Like, it's kind of like what's a master's now.
Right.
So it was one of the first bachelor's degrees, and yeah, I got in there. And that's also how I ended up in Canada, because I had a partner university, and I did an exchange semester there. And
where was that?
Calgary. It was Mount Royal. It was a college back then still. So I went to Mount Royal, and that's where I met my now fiance in Calgary, and that's why I moved back to Canada too. So yeah, it's a lot of like one thing led to another kind of thing. That's why I'm here now.
That's pretty cool. So you spent 5 years, you said, in Calgary?
Yes.
Other than studying, what were you doing there?
No, we moved in. We met in 2008, lived in Germany for a year so that I can finish my degree.
Uh-huh.
Then moved back to Calgary because if people are from two different countries, it's really exhausting not knowing if you are allowed to stay at the end of the year.
Yeah.
It's puts a whole different level of stress into any relationship. And then we moved to Calgary, said, okay, let's settle in Canada for now. Lived there for 5 years. I had an open work permit, and then I actually found my job in the US. So I'm a resident here now, but I work for a company in Chicago.
So. Oh, cool. So tell us about this company in Chicago. Is that Dun.js?
They do make Dun.js, yes.
Dun.js is a tool?
So it's basically a tool set of, I don't know if you've heard of it. So the company is called Pitovi. We do JavaScript consulting. It was nice to actually focus on the front end completely.
Mm-hmm.
I've been doing this for 4 years, and I've used their tools for about 7.
This really explains the JavaScript channel.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're what is it called? Pitovi?
Pitovi.
Pitovi? So Pitovi does consulting, and you're actually doing front end JavaScript, not server side JavaScript?
For right now, we always focused on front end JavaScript, because when we started, there was no server side JavaScript, right? So it all started with, I don't know if you heard about it, a tool called JavaScript MVC. I talked to someone, I know JavaScript MVC. It's like, no, the framework. It's like, that's why it was
it's called JavaScript MVC, all one word, right?
Yeah, it came out in 2007, and it was like a full suite, and no, I don't know, it's not very well known, but it was a full suite for building client-side applications. So it had a dependency manager, MVC, and the documentation engine, test runner, all this stuff. When I started, decided to split it all up into individual projects, And one of them is CanJS, the other one is SteelJS for dependency management. There's a documentation engine and everything you kind of need. And this is basically DoneJS is the next new reborn version of what was JavaScript MVC 3-4 years ago, but with modern tools. So it runs on Node, it has server-side rendering. And
cool. So is this open source or is it proprietary?
Yes, it's open source. And I have the privilege of actually working full time on open source, which is really cool.
That is pretty awesome. What are some of the challenges you might face working on open source?
With open source, I noticed that it's interesting that business success doesn't necessarily lead to open source success. Mm-hmm. And the other way around. So I saw a talk of Remy Sharp from JSBin at JSConf this weekend, and he was talking about the challenges of running JSBin, which is hugely popular, but not being able to monetize it in any way that's sustainable, right?
Right, right.
And on the other hand, for us, it's been pretty good business-wise, even though it wasn't a new backbone or Angular or React. But, you know, we think that we have a lot of 7 years of experience. We committed to it for longer than nobody else I know, right? And saying we want to improve this, we want to keep this going. And that's something that's easy to overlook when you always get excited about the newest thing. And it's like, what am I going to do in 5 years with it, right? Mm-hmm. So I think that's important. And that's where we combine all of those tools that we split up into one big thing again. And the biggest challenge to actually answer your question, I think it's like competing with somebody of a budget of Meteor or Facebook or Google is not easy, and it's not necessarily it's not always the best technology that wins. It's just promotional game too, right?
So sure, that makes sense. Very interesting. That makes sense. That's actually a little surprising for me because I thought you're probably going to say what I see as a huge challenge a lot of the time when I'm working on something and we think, hey, let's open source this would be awesome, is documentation.
Yeah, and that's the hardest part to actually put effort in, right?
Right.
Like, so it takes, I would say, less than 20% to actually code the functionality, and all the rest is actually maintenance and fixing bugs quickly when they come in, and also documenting it. And documentation is actually a huge challenge if you have projects that run for longer. Mm-hmm. Getting rid of all the legacy stuff, that's something we're still struggling with a lot.
So that's something I really wanted to mention to the community that's listening to Vancouver Tech Podcast, is if you want to get yourself a DoneJS t-shirt, we have a large, I believe, available. If you want to get that t-shirt, why don't you post either in the Dev YVR Slack, you can either call out to me directly, Drew or James, at Drew or at James, or at Vancouver Tech Podcast. I think we'll make a channel for it as well. If you want to get that shirt, why don't you post a link to your favorite tool for documentation and a little bit of a sentence describing why.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I mean, you'll pick someone and we'll give you a shirt.
A DoneJS shirt.
I have other sizes too, if it does fit.
Awesome. So if you don't want large, let us know and we might have a different size for you as well. Okay, so let's come back to this. So we've got DoneJS, we got some other things, some pretty cool tools in the tool chain where you're working at, but that's not necessarily your main project?
It is. So work-wise, professionally, that is. My personal main project, which complements this surprisingly, is two, Feathers. And funny enough, DoneJS and Feathers is used in SAM, my little open source Siri that I think one of you saw.
Yeah, it was me.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, because I'm a big fan of Code and Coffee, so I always go. But yeah, I saw you demoing my SAM and talking to it and stuff. So maybe you can talk about what my SAM is and what it does.
So basically what it does, it's probably best explained as an open source Siri. It runs, however, on web technologies. Mm-hmm. So it runs on HTML5 and Node.
So you said open source Siri? I'm not sure I've heard that word before.
Siri? You're right. So virtual digital assistant is, I think, the long-winded description. Mm-hmm. But it is basically a tool that you can talk to and it performs actions for you.
Kind of like OK Google?
That is Google Now. That is the same thing.
And you can actually train it too, right? I saw you training it to like know what a task was.
Yeah, and that's, I think, one of the biggest things when you use closed source tools like Siri or Google Now, okay, Google. There's Cortana, I think, is the Microsoft version of it. So everybody does it, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you talk to Siri, and Siri has no idea what you're talking about, and you're like, stupid Apple. With this, it's kind of nice because you have more of a like closer relationship with this. Okay, you didn't get it this time. I'm going to show you how it's right, and the next time you know what I'm talking about.
So that was pretty interesting. I watched, there's a bit of a video that you have on your GitHub repo for how to use MySam. And I think you just called it Sam because it's your Sam.
Everybody's
Sam. And I thought it was really cool. You're talking to it, and you took little sort of snippets of speech, and you were able to use those to teach Sam what they meant. Where did you come up with this, and how does that work? How does the language parsing work?
So the language parsing is actually the HTML5 spec, and the actual figuring out what you meant is actually using machine learning, so neural networks.
Mm-hmm.
I got pretty fascinated with the whole topic from like a philosophical, and like I read a lot of the novels that are like pretty interesting for that. And then a lot of the literature in general. And I was like, hey, you're a developer. You could actually try it yourself. So that is using a Node Natural. That's a natural language processing library. But
Node Natural?
Basically, the idea is to classify the probabilities for certain sentences and say, okay, you probably meant that, right? That's the whole point of machine learning, to get those right. But instead of using their algorithms to determine probabilities, I hooked it up to a neural network. It's called BrainJS. Sadly, not officially maintained, but it works awesomely well. So
I remember when that BrainJS came out, and I was like, what the hell is this? It looks really sweet, and it's really cool to think about that in the whole ecosystem and how it changed so quickly. You're able to make this, like, you know, your own Siri without paying anything, without, you know, paying anyone. Like, we could pay, you know, Intel or IBM to use these crazy algorithms, but no, we can just use it with all this open source stuff.
I think that was important for me. So there's another open source project, Sirius. It's more of a research project that does some cool machine learning stuff too. But I haven't found anything else in that area to make the whole topic more approachable.
Yeah.
And on the other hand, I keep seeing like flashy stealth AI startup promo videos.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, this is so cool. But then when you actually try it yourself, like with something that's open source and more approachable, you realize that actually, no, it's not. But it's the hot thing right now. And nobody really has a good idea of what it actually means. And I thought that that's probably one of the biggest reasons why I wanted it to be open source.
When I saw Google open source their machine learning API like a few weeks before, I knew like, okay, tomorrow there's going to be like 6 new startups that do machine learning, because they're going to be like, yeah, we use this library, Google uses it, it's going to be the craziest thing ever. But as far as I can tell, just looking at it briefly, it's really complicated stuff. And this Node Brain, looking at it, seemed a lot more simple. Or you had a Natural Brain, your Natural Brain library.
Yeah.
You just train single, it's 2 arguments, input, expectation, and then it trains it. That's really cool.
And then you throw something at it and gives you probabilities back. So with open sourcing, there's a lot of in that area that's being open sourced right now, especially from big companies. But I still think, because I've been doing open source for so long, is that you know, they could open source all their tools, but they're not useful at all without the data, and they're also very not easily accessible without having gigantic data sets.
So that actually was something I was really interested in asking, was so you've got this machine learning, you've got this program that uses the HTML5 spec for the audio recognition, I believe.
Yep.
But really it's something that you can use to collect interesting data, see how that works, and then to learn from there. How does the learning actually happen? How do you store this data? And I think you don't have right now an official host provider or anything like that where you're collecting interesting data and doing anything useful with it. Where do you go from here?
So that is actually a good question. It's using Feathers for the API. We can talk about that later. But basically,
absolutely,
what it does, the API infrastructure is kind of there already, so you could just move it to the cloud. And that's kind of what I'm hoping to like reach, is kind of like an open source repository of training data. But it's a little bit of a challenge, because you have to, when you make it publicly available, right, you have to add a lot of safeguards so that people don't submit.
Right, right.
Is there a spec for the data output?
one I came up with, but there isn't a standard.
Yeah, so it's going to be hard to like get. You know, you can't pull in someone else's data set, right? Because there's like a.
I don't know if there is any like language training data sets that do what. Like,
I think. Have you heard of Torch? The Lua yes. one. Torch. I think they did like a bunch of image crawling, and they did like they have a data set that's like a tree, so you could load it up and use and analyze images and know if it's a tree or not. So they do have some that's like, oh, it's 10 million different images of trees, and so it can actually tell you if something's a tree or not. So yeah. they are out there, but the thing is they're you're coupled to a specific implementation of the machine learning library, which is kind of tricky. I mean, I don't know what's going to happen with this Google thing, but you know, maybe you should start a spec so that you can like pull in whatever you want and digest out all these different what'd you call them, repositories of.
That's a I don't know. So with SAM, it's interesting because you basically just need the sentence that you train it with, right? Mm-hmm. Say, what is the weather in Berlin? Yeah. So it knows, okay, I need to tell you about the weather. And because the prediction algorithm of what you trained is so accurate, is actually the algorithm of what you mentioned on pulling out the information is super stupid. It just looks at the two words before, mm-hmm. and if they're the same, then take this. If there is something that applies to is more has more words that match in front of it, mm-hmm. then use that. So it's not very sophisticated, but getting that information already, it says, okay, well, Berlin is location number 6. So this right. information is pretty, I think it's a pretty easy data structure, but once you train the brain, I guess, it has a JSON serializable format.
Yeah.
So yeah, I find that quite interesting. We're looking at, I guess at words, right? Really looking at the words and then determining the output based on that. There's linguistics is a relatively new science kind of field, and I guess Chomsky and his universal grammar have been a really interesting and big influence. Somewhat controversial, maybe, but I think one of his colleagues, Steven Pinker, came up with a pretty compelling argument for universal grammar and showed some pretty good proofs in The Language Instinct. Are you using any of this sort of linguistic study to help with the data analysis?
That is a very good question, but I haven't actually thought that far ahead at all. So it's like when I sat down, it was actually for a demo for I helped run the YYCJS. Mm-hmm. So if there are Calgary listeners, go to YYCJS. It's also a lot of talks are online. Helped run that with my friend Eric for 5 years. And it was initially actually just a demo of this is how you use feathers and Dun.js together to do something fun. But then it turned out that it worked surprisingly well. And
yeah, I was quite surprised with the demo. I thought it was great. It looks like a really fun and interesting project to get involved in. And as you've open sourced it, it looks really accessible as well. Yeah. So I hope we get a chance to maybe work a little bit together on that. But can you tell us a bit about Feathers? What is Feathers?
So we have two parts. We talked a little about Dun.js, so that's all the front-end stuff. SAM runs Electron or any other WebKit browser. Mm-hmm. And Feathers is the API layer that is over that natural language and Brain.js on top. That's an API layer that makes it accessible. And basically, it's have you used Express?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So it basically works the same way, actually. You can just drop it in instead of Express. But instead of using middleware, you can register CRUD objects. So you can say, okay, at the /todos route, use this MongoDB connection, and it gives you everything and sets up all the REST boilerplate and all this stuff. But what is great about Feathers additionally is that you also get real-time events. So you get information on when somebody created a new to-do. It throws it out to Socket.io or WebSockets or whatever.
So it sounds sort of like Sales, right?
Yes, but it's much smaller.
Okay.
So it's literally the core 200 lines of code.
Oh, nice.
So
it's on top of Express, right? It's not instead of Express.
It's on top. Yeah. So it's like Express used to be on top of Connect, the middleware collection. And so it's just like Express is like a tiny wrapper for that.
Yeah.
And the Node HTTP layer, this is a tiny wrapper that adds this like concept of CRUD services that do things.
And then the sort of the real-time evented part.
You get for free.
Yeah.
Like that just happens.
That's
cool.
So that uses Socket.io behind the scenes?
You can use... So there's two. There's Socket.io. That's the usually used one. There's Primus? Probably
Primus. We usually say Primus.
Which is just a general wrapper for every kind of WebSocket.
Oh, okay.
And in theory, you could probably add any other kind of real-time protocol.
Oh, nice. That's cool.
So Feathers is an open source?
It's also open source, yes.
Nice.
We started that with Eric that I ran YYCJS with.
Mm-hmm. What was it called again? This.
YYCJS.
Oh, cool. Yeah. And that was Calgary-based?
Yeah, that's a Calgary JavaScript meetup.
Nice. Sounds pretty cool. Any plans to run a JavaScript meetup here or take part in any?
Yeah, definitely. That was my challenge, actually, because mm-hmm. I tried to contact the Node meetup, and I think the Node meetup is dead.
Oh, okay. So maybe a good place to spend some focus.
Yeah, I don't want to just... you know, start a meetup. Yeah. But I have the experience, so if somebody would like some help with running one, then I'd be definitely open for it. But yeah, so the Van.js is only every couple months, right?
Right. Which is surprising because there seem to be a lot of JavaScript developers in the multiverse.
Yeah, I guess for one person running it, it's a big challenge to set it up all the time. I've also found that maybe they're a little too picky with the speaker selection. Mm-hmm. I've heard that a lot in Vancouver because there is a community that a lot of people come out. I've heard a lot more often than meetups that say, hey, you can just show up like Coffee and Code and do a presentation. More often with the bigger meetups, I've heard just make sure that the speakers are awesome. And so far, I have not seen a single Vancouver local speak at any of those meetups. So... It would be nice.
Yeah.
It would be nice. So in the 4 months I've been here, so I'm not saying that's like generally a problem, but it would be nice to have the same thing for like the community locally, because the interest is definitely there.
It sure seems to be, yeah. So tell us a little bit. We were talking a little before about these t-shirts and sending them from the States to Canada.
Yes, so I was in Chicago this week for our year-end retreat because we're a remote company. It's nice to actually meet people physically. So I got a call from my fiance, and she was like, so there is 3 giant boxes UPS just dropped, and it was $450 in customs for I think it was $1,200 worth in shirts. Wow. So don't send stuff from the US. I think they learned that lesson now. It would have probably been much cheaper, especially with the exchange rate, to print them in Canada.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So I think it was a year and a half ago, maybe, I ordered a mechanical keyboard from Wasid Keyboards in the States. And it was, you know, I can't remember, it was like $100 or $150. And then the exchange rate, which wasn't that bad at the time. And it came up here, and I had to go to the post office to pick it up. And boom, $40 in duty. So there's definitely going to be that hidden surprise if you're ordering stuff from the States.
That's what I like about Europe, because you don't anymore.
No borders, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty awesome.
You mentioned CanJS a couple of times. So can you talk about how CanJS works and where it's used or where you use it?
It's a part of Dun.js, really. So it's the MVC part that we extracted out of JavaScript MVC. Okay. So backstory, it goes back 7 years now, which is pretty long. And it is really a client-side MVC framework, which we have them in the minis.
Yeah.
But what is nice about it is that it works well together with the stack that we put together in Dun.js again. And also some kind of reliability that it's been there for 7 years is planning on staying there. So there's apparently big companies like HP and the Apple Store that decided to use it.
Awesome. But not, that's crazy.
But not talk about it because, you know, that's not their primary business.
Yeah.
So unlike Google or Facebook, there's no point for them to
should be able to find it in their open source license information, though.
Yes.
When you look at the store, you should be able to see it, right? That's really awesome.
And, yeah, cars.com, and we worked with Sam's Club Mobile. I did a good chunk of that. It was interesting to learn about how those companies kind of work.
Yeah.
It was a fun project.
So if I want to get started with some of these, like Dun.js or Feathers, where would I go?
For Dun.js, dun.js.com, there's a guide to build a real-time chat app, which uses a Feathers backend, but the backend it already runs on Heroku somewhere, so you can just connect to it. But for Feathers, feathers.js.com, we're working on a newer release with more guidance. And
Is there any plans to move any of these into ES6 now that ES6 is a thing?
Yes. So with Feathers, that's what I'm doing right now. We have a bunch of different adapters for MongoDB and for SQLS, for every kind of database. Those are all using ES6 now, which is awesome.
Sweet.
And Kanji is going to be a little bit more of a challenge because you need to actually do some house cleaning throughout the whole code base that has been around for a
while. Also, I guess the code might sort of get larger, right? Because you need all these polyfills now with all these different...
Yeah.
Like to compile it down.
So honestly, I don't know. That's a good question for a client-side framework. It's probably important, but I don't think it's that big of a deal anymore, right?
Yeah.
It's
like, I guess if your whole app is all MV star front-end, then like I guess you're already kind of pot committed.
It'll get large anyway. And most people want to use ES6 anyway, so you have to throw the polyfills in.
Yeah.
It's much nicer and easier on Node.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. Well, I mean, you don't have to worry about everyone else's environment, whereas the browser, you have to. You have no choice.
So tell us a little bit about the company that you work for. You said everybody is remote and you meet once a year?
About three times.
Three times a year?
Which is more often than I think most fully remote companies.
It sounds like
We have people from all over the U.S., Canada. We have a guy in Chile and two in Croatia. Mm-hmm. So it's literally all over the world. Yeah. And it's actually really nice to see that even if you don't work together all the time, just getting together and having a good time. We had a board game night on Wednesday night, so it's fun and it can work. I've been doing it for 4 years and I don't complain about it at all. I love it.
Are you guys hiring?
Well, we always take resumes for sure. Right now we're like at the size that's kind of good, like 35 people was what we were planning for in order to be able to support open source. So that is kind of the core value and t-shirts. Yeah, that is kind of the core thing of the whole company and what it was built on was open source. And you need a certain amount of people that support that work as consultants and use the tools as well. So
sounds pretty cool. All right. Well, David, thank you very much for being on Vancouver Tech Podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
Thanks for listening to another episode of
VancouverTechPodcast.ca. That's our site. You can actually email us too at show@VancouverTechPodcast.ca.
Or find us in the YVR Dev Slack. I'm at Drew.
I'm at James.
We're almost always online.
You can actually get an invite to YVR Dev Slack if you haven't got one already at yvrdev.herokuapp.com.
See you there.
Bye.